Okay, guys, it's Bill Fisher here. I'm here with Rod Kite, the attorney that wrote the DEA Clarifies the Marijuana Extract Rule and CBD Legality article of the recent days here. Fantastic article, by the way. Rod, thanks for being with us.
Bill, I'm pleased to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so I guess we can just get right down to it. There's a lot of people out there that sell CBD that have a ton of questions because, you know, it's all over the place, and there's a lot of other clickbait type of companies that put out press that have confusing things in it that don't actually apply. You're an attorney, and you're in this mix every day, and I think you could probably clarify a lot of the stuff that's out there that's myth and what's real. Our first question is basically, you know, what does it mean? What does this new clarification mean for companies that sell CBD across the whole country, not only in states that have legalized marijuana rules, but since most of the CBD that's sold is from hemp, what does it mean?
Well, I think that at least at the federal level, this clarification by the DEA is helpful. It doesn't go as far as it should, but it opens a door that I'll discuss as we talk more about this that I think is very helpful for the CBD industry. As I guess most of the listeners are aware, the DEA back in December issued a final rule in which it purported to say that any hemp extract containing one or more cannabinoids, including CBD, in fact, it specifically referenced CBD, was a Schedule I drug. And that's absolutely not the case for a number of reasons, and this clarification helped in that respect.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people feel the same way. And we all know that, you know, some CBD companies, they import their CBD in legal fashion through, through other countries, the UK, et cetera. And some people get their CBD domestically from participants in the Farm Bill. And right. And then there's another third, you know, gray market area where people are getting their CBD, whether it's from, you know, different states that have legalized it, et cetera. Assuming that all of the CBD was the same from those three sources and the THC was within the legal limits, what is the difference? Like, I know one would be legal, one would be illegal, yet it's the same thing. Can you clear that up a little bit for us?
Sure, Bill. And it's one of the strangest things in law, frankly, is that this one compound, cannabidiol, which is the same regardless of the scenario in which you source it, is legal or not based on its source. And, you know, that's not always the case with things. You would think that CBD would be lawful in and of itself in the abstract, but that's, you know, the way the law has evolved, it's just not the case. So I guess the primary takeaway from anything that I try to write about CBD or discuss is that CBD is legal or not based on its source. And there are currently two and a half, to be totally clear, ways in which CBD can be legal. And it has to do, again, with the source. One is if CBD is extracted or sourced from what we call the accepted or excluded part of the cannabis plant. And by that, I mean that in the Federal Controlled Substances Act, it defined marijuana, but it said certain parts of the marijuana plant, such as the mature stalk, the non-germinating seeds, and a few other components, were not considered marijuana and therefore were not within the definition of marijuana under the Act. So CBD sourced from those parts of the plant are legal.
Okay. I've heard some conflicting things about that. I heard that the stalks or something like that wouldn't contain enough CBD. As a matter of fact, the DEA themselves wrote in that, I would believe it was in that clarification recently, that it would be most likely not doable to be able to extract enough CBD to make it worthwhile. Considering we're talking about the marijuana plant, the parts of marijuana plant that were legal. I'm not talking about industrial hemp. So what do they
right,
say?
Right. Like, well, you know, that's always, it seems to me, a very odd argument for the DEA to have. Because
I agree.
You know,
I have to agree.
The DEA is talking about a legal matter, But then in order to sort of defend its position on a legal matter, it resorts to a botanical,
Yeah, they're
you know,
experts.
question, really.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they're experts. And I've heard, frankly, from I've got clients, plenty of clients in the CBD industry, and I've heard some say, absolutely, you can source from the stalk, and others say, absolutely, you cannot. And I'm not a botanist. In fact, you know, I've got a black thumb. And so I really don't know the answer. But the point of the matter is, from a legal standpoint, and I think the right approach when you're trying to decide legally is, if CBD can be sourced from one of these parts of the plant, then it is legal. And that's what the clarification that the DEA specifically made through
Correct.
A lot of bluster and confusing language about botany and whether or not you can source it. But that's the thing. From a legal standpoint, if you can source it from those parts of the plant, it's undeniably legal.
That would be even if it came from plants that have above the legal limit of THC, if that were the case. But, you know, not saying that that's the case for anybody.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Right. And that actually leads into the sort of second level of where it's legal, and that's when you source it from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is based on a case from the 2003-2004 called Hemp Industries versus the DEA, in which
mm-hmm.
the DEA actually put forth a similar kind of a rule that said, well, hemp products can't be brought into the United States because they contain trace amounts of THC, which is unlawful. And that law got struck down as a void. And the court said that hemp products that contain trace amounts or less of naturally occurring THC didn't fit under the Controlled Substances Act. And so that really, you know, through today is where a lot of you hear about, you know, extracts coming from the stalk and whatnot. That decision is a little bit confusing in and of itself. We're really happy about the decision because it really clarified that hemp can be brought in and products derived from hemp. But the court itself, in one part of the opinion, talks about specifically these accepted parts of the plant that I've discussed earlier, the stalk and the non-germinating
right.
seeds. And then another part of the decision, it talks about hemp as being really just the non-psychoactive plant containing trace amounts or less of THC. And so it's a little bit unclear as to whether the court is saying that in the entire hemp plant grown from abroad, as long as it's non-psychoactive, is lawful to import, or just those accepted parts. So it's very clear, again, that from the accepted parts of the plant, you can derive CBD. Whether or not you can derive CBD from the flower is a little bit of a different story. I tend to argue that the opinion leans in that direction, but that's one of the gray areas that
right.
we're discussing.
And then we're talking about the flower of a plant that contains enough THC to make it illegal, because that's the flower. They're saying you can't get it from the flower from a plant that contains more than 0.3%. Et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right, for sure. But when you source it from abroad, there is some language in the decision that seems to imply that you may be able to derive it from the flower,
mm-hmm.
as long as the flower only contains, again, trace amounts of
right, right, under
and,
what
and,
they
and,
would
and
consider
the,
industrial, I guess.
Right, exactly. And that later on, which, you know, we talked about the Farm Bill, which I think we're probably about to talk about, there was a standard, and that standard is less than 0.3% THC. At the time that the hemp industry's cases were decided back in 2003, 2004, that standard hadn't evolved, and so they used this sort of trace amounts. And it's,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of accepted today that if it's less than 0.3%, that kind of fits that definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of flows into the third way that CBD is lawful, and that's when it's sourced from any part of the plant, of an industrial hemp plant that is grown pursuant to the Farm Act in the state.
Right.
And that's undeniably lawful within the state that it operates, unless the state law itself, you know, says no, but most states don't do that, that have hemp programs. And there is a spending provision that I can get into. I don't want to talk too long and run over your questions, but that really impacts the federal legality of CBD.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, that clears up a little bit for us for sure. Now, do you know of the DEA enforcing any law that would conflict with the Ninth Circuit? Because I know there's people out there that have had products seized and then released, and then they test them or they don't test them. It's sort of like they're out there doing whatever they want at some point. I mean, do you know of any like larger cases where where the DEA was enforcing some type of a law that would conflict with what the Ninth Circuit has said?
Bill, I'm not aware of the DEA getting too involved in this issue, at least on the enforcement side of things. What I tend to hear about are local agencies coming in and, say, raiding a shop and taking, and these are state actors. And the reason, well, there may be a couple of theories, but the main reason that I believe that the DEA is holding back is because, CBD lawfully sourced from the industrial hemp plant, the DEA and any other federal, and as I'm going to talk about in a moment, state agencies that receive federal funds, but any federal agency is simply prohibited from interfering. So let me back up here. So the 2014 Farm Act, which is a huge comprehensive act having to do with agriculture, has a small provision in allowing states to enact pilot research programs for hemp and for industrial hemp.
Mm-hmm.
And industrial hemp and its component parts, such as CBD, are lawful in those states. Well, the state of Kentucky, who had one of the first and best pilot programs, ran into a little bit of a headbutting session with the DEA. It attempted to bring seeds into the country to start its pilot program, and the DEA said no, held the seeds, and Kentucky ended up having to sue in order to get access to those seeds.
Right, I think I remember that.
Despite the fact that it was, perfectly lawful, acting according to both federal and state law. So the year after, in 2015, there was what's called an omnibus spending bill. The federal government, Congress, passes spending bills fairly frequently. In 2015, it passed a spending bill that was thousands of pages long that covered a lot of things for 2016. But stuck in there was a clause, and I believe it was Rand Paul, but I'm not positive, that put this clause in there that said no federal funds from that act or any other federal act, meaning essentially no federal funds at all, could be used to prohibit the transport, the use, the sale, or the processing of industrial hemp, including, and this is the key piece, including in states that had not enacted industrial hemp bills. So what that did was it tied everyone's hands who gets federal funding from interfering with industrial hemp laws. And
right.
So if you're deriving your CBD from a lawfully grown industrial hemp plant, then the DEA cannot step in, or at least is not supposed to step in,
right,
and try to prosecute because its hands are tied.
Mm-hmm.
And one key piece of that I think is important that's been a little bit overlooked is most states, in fact, maybe even all the states, but most states receive federal funding for their drug interdiction programs. So even if CBD is illegal under state law in a certain state, if that state receives federal funds or that agency that decides it wants to prosecute receives federal funds, it's prohibited from doing so. That's a difficult argument to be made, and certainly you don't want to be caught in the position of having to make that argument.
Right.
I'd like to get the knowledge out there, because law enforcement, I find, by and large, is not educated about CBD, and certainly not some of these subtle points having to do with the law.
Right, especially the local guys, yep. And that's right. One thing that brings me to the point to where, us having this discussion, in no way are you and I talking that, anything bad about the DEA. I mean, they have their hands full with the bad guys, and they do a great job with that. And so hats off to them for sure, because I'm sure, there's a lot of guys out there that'll listen that are with the DEA. Thank you for your service and all the things that you do. And in no way are we saying that the DEA is the bad guys here. We're just trying to clarify it for the guys that are trying to operate according to the law. So we don't want to go into it confused. We'd like to get it nice and clear. And sometimes when they put out things like what you wrote the article about, it's like, here, this is great, but here's some more gray area stuff that you still won't understand, just to confuse us a little bit more. So for sure, those are the good guys. But anyway, back to the discussion. How does a company stay compliant? Is it strictly by sticking to the Farm Act or Farm Bill and a chain of custody from companies that are participating in the Farm Bill, or are there other ways to stay compliant?
Sure, that's a great question, and I think that I'll, you know, we'll talk on the federal and then talk on an individual state level. So, you know, there are all sorts of different industries, sub-industries within the hemp and CBD space itself. You know, you have your cultivators, you have your extractors, you have your distributors, your retailers, and so on and so forth. And the analysis is a little bit different for each, but essentially, yeah, the fundamental piece of that is that you want to ensure. Is that you want to ensure that your CBD is lawfully sourced from industrial hemp that complies with its state laws and with the Farm Bill? And you talk about chain of custody. Yes, if let's say you're a distributor and you're getting hemp oil that contains CBD, well, you want to know. You want to be able to trace back and be able to say with certainty and with documented evidence that this hemp oil came from these hemp plants, which were licensed to be grown under whatever state, Oregon, Colorado, Kentucky, North Carolina is going online soon, and so on and so forth, and trace it back to a cultivator who's acting in compliance with the law. So that's the first piece. And if you do that at a federal level, you're going to be okay. Again, you're acting under the Farm Bill, and the Omnibus Spending Bill prohibits federal funds from being used to interfere. Really, the difficulty with the CBD industry has to do with at the level of the individual states. And so, you know, plenty of states are coming online with robust Farm Bill compliant hemp laws, and that's wonderful. But some states aren't, and some states in particular have pretty draconian anti-marijuana laws. And if they don't modify their laws to allow hemp or allow CBD, then CBD could fall under the definition of marijuana in those states. And so selling CBD in those particular states could at least be arguably a crime. And so that's the difficulty at the national scale is, you know, you can operate nationally and be within the bounds of the law, but you may be tripping up on certain the laws of certain specific states.
I see. Now, there's a lot of publicly traded companies that are out there, and you know, there's investors who look to invest on a daily basis, and they see the excitement in the marijuana sector, and CBD, I believe, falls into that sector, even though it's not marijuana. You know, there's a lot of people that are interested in the sector itself.
Sure.
You know, how should they look at this new clarification? Is it something good? Is it something that's even more confusing, or is it something that's clarifying and helpful for them to make a decision whether they want to buy a particular stock, et cetera?
Well, yeah, I think it's helpful in that it gives a little bit of guidance. You know, I've been sort of pounding the drum that CBD is legal or not based on its source for a while now. And the DEA clarification was the first time that really came to light, that it was acknowledged by the U.S. government that is in fact the case. It's lawful or not based on its source. We wish that the DEA had gone far enough to say, oh yes, you know, not only from the accepted part of the plants, but also from Farm Bill compliant hemp and so on and so forth. It didn't go that far, but the logic is the same. And so as far as people who are interested in the sector, you know, you want to, first of all, get yourself up to speed on the state of the law. And it's not necessarily an easy thing to do. First of all, the law is gray. It's complicated. You've got state laws that interfere with federal laws. You've got and also, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. So you want to get educated, and then you want to take that education and you want to vet the companies that you're investing in. If you're talking about a publicly traded company, it's really difficult, I think, to operate as a publicly traded company in the CBD space at the present moment. Because the only surefire way to know that you are compliant at the state and federal level in all 50 states is to be sourcing your CBD from these accepted parts of the plant.
Yeah, from Farm Bill guys.
So that's tough, and I represent a publicly traded company that had to do a prospectus for an opinion letter for actually the Australian Stock Exchange, and they were very very careful to make sure that their CBD products fell right exactly square within the law. And I think as you and I chatted a little before, you know, there are certainly operators out there that are not sourcing their CBD lawfully, and that muddies the water for everybody, because you know, their modus operandi, so to speak, tends to be that, well, you know, how's anyone gonna know where I got this CBD? Well, the better position is to know that you got it lawfully, and
to be able
to documented evidence that, you know, this is, I got this lawfully. I'm acting in good faith. I believe in this product, and I want to act within the bounds of the law. And that's really what we want to see more of.
Yeah, a little proactive action on the company's standpoint. You know, they can put forth, hey, look, this is where we're sourcing, and this is the chain of custody of our CBD, so that guarantees that at least we're acting within the known boundaries of the law, as opposed to not giving the information. So that's a good point. I guess if you're investing in a publicly traded company, at least make sure that they're sourcing their CBD through the proper channels. As some diligence, you know, that you can you know, do.
Right.
That's excellent.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I was going to say, to that point, I represent a company in the Southeast that makes really good hemp oil products, rich in CBD, and we had a situation arise where someone was questioning where the CBD, where the hemp oil came from, and wanted to know the various levels of the different cannabinoids, and I reached out to my client, and literally within 10 minutes I had a copy of the certificate of analysis from that particular batch and where it was sourced, and it completely cleared the air, and everything was fine. And that's the level of operations that you want to be working at, where if someone ever questions it, you can just bam, provide a certificate of analysis, and there it is. So whoever wants to know can see exactly where it came from, what's got in it, and so on and so forth.
Yep. Excellent. So the main focus of the real recent clarification from the DEA was to point out the differences between hemp and marijuana, and how does that help other, how, and so that helps other companies. You know, that helps companies that are selling CBD now abide by the different rules. And thank God for that, because the clearer it gets, I think the bigger the industry is going to get it in itself. And you know, I'm a proponent of that as well. So I hear about the 2016 omnibus law. Could you go into a little bit more detail about what that is for us? I believe it's funding or something. So explain it to me.
Yeah. So the government, you know, in order to operate, Congress has to appropriate funds. So we pay our taxes, and then that all those taxes have to go to various things. And so Congress will enact various spending bills, authorizing spending on everything from Veterans Affairs to Social Security to road building to the arts, you know, whatever it is. Well, in any event, in 2015, there was an omnibus spending bill, which just means a huge spending bill having to do with a lot of things. And in that omnibus spending bill, actually it's section 763, for anyone who's interested in looking it up, is a very small clause that said no federal funds can be used to prohibit the transportation, use, processing, or sale of industrial hemp in the state in which it is cultivated, or in any other state, even if ones that where it's not cultivated. And I'm paraphrasing, that's not the exact language. I can get that if you need it. But that's essentially it. And so what it did is it said that that no federal funding can be used to interfere with industrial hemp.
And that went all the way through down to the sale. So that's great. So basically it clarifies that it is legal to sell hemp that contains cannabidiol if it comes from participants of the Farm Bill and according to this omnibus law. Am I correct?
Yeah, okay. You are correct. And I, you know, the DEA has yet to clarify that position, but again, it flows naturally in that CBD is not scheduled, cannabidiol is not scheduled on the Controlled Substances Act. Industrial hemp sourced, you know, that's cultivated pursuant to the Farm Bill is accepted from the definition of marijuana under the Controlled Substances Act, and no federal funds can be used to interfere with that. So that completely, you know, it opens up the door significantly. Now, what we would have preferred is for Congress to just slightly amend the Farm Bill, which we're hoping it's going to do, or propose a new hemp bill that just says industrial hemp is legal throughout the United States. That's a little bit of a, that's a lot more, has a lot more clarity and effect. than simply just restricting funding, which is sort of a backdoor way to legislate. You know, Congress does sometimes. But it's there, and it's there, and it's helpful. And the other point that I think I mentioned earlier, but I'd like to reiterate, is I've read in certain places where they say, well, the DEA is prevented from doing this, or the USDA is prevented from doing that. That's not what the Omnibus Spending Clause says. It says that no federal funds from any act can be used to interfere. And so what that means is not only federal agencies, any federal agency, but also state agencies that receive federal funds are prohibited from interfering.
With the act, yep.
From Farm Bill compliant industrial hemp.
One question that just kind of came up in my head once we were saying, the federal the laws for marijuana and things that are being affected by each state. Let's say Colorado. Now, marijuana remains illegal because of the amount of THC that's contained in it. Banks have taken a position to where they won't allow different transactions to go through, especially Visa and MasterCard and other things like that, because of the federal issues with marijuana. Now, recently, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but recently Visa and MasterCard have done a huge sweep of companies that were selling CBD, even legal CBD from the Farm Act, and they have shut down their merchant accounts and stopped them from processing and stuff. They claim because cannabidiol does not have a merchant category code, and some guys are getting fined and this and that. It's kind of ambiguous because they haven't clarified anything as to why they being the banks have shut down specific guys. Do you see that federal banking issues that we're having right now, do you see that in any short-term facet being fixed or addressed at all? Or is this just something that's just going to have to naturally follow its own course through the private sector?
Well, you know, banks are by nature very conservative institutions, and you know, there's nothing prohibiting the banks from actually participating not only in the hemp industry, but in the marijuana industry proper. And that is, you know, there was a FinCEN paper that was issued, I think, about a year and a half ago that was trying to encourage banks to participate in the marijuana industry. It would strain you would that you wouldn't think that that's the case, but it was actually the federal government, you know, trying to entice banks to get into the industry. Now, what it did was actually scared banks off, because by providing certain types of guidelines, there are very strict guidelines that the banks had to follow, and you know, it sort of reiterated that banks can be punished very vigorously. But to answer your question with respect to the hemp and CBD, this is fully legal. There's no reason that they shouldn't be involved, but they are. They're just banks are scared, and as big as the industry is right now, the amount of dollars that are going through are still not large enough to entice any major bank in size to participate. Mm-hmm. So what you're finding, a lot of local banks who are able to vet their customers personally, you know, are getting involved. You're having some credit unions pop up. You're having some alternative credit card processing companies, but the fees are higher. It's sometimes it's more difficult to operate. I'm a big proponent of local banks, but sometimes it's difficult if you live in a place where your local bank isn't going to help out to try to do business with a local bank somewhere else.
Right.
It's just really difficult. And I think it's going to require a little bit more in the way of clarifying the law and some of the laws changing at a national level.
It forces
better banking services.
I agree. It forces some of the CBD companies to sort of send the transactions offshore and only to bring the money back. And you know, it's a very cumbersome way to operate. But I guess right now it's sort of one of the things that have to, you know, has to happen. You know, some customers that, let's say, buy CBD from a domestic CBD provider, like a retailer, are seeing like an offshore transaction happen, and their banks are flagging that, and it's a lot of friction for the end user, and difficult for difficult for the companies to overcome. It's affecting their bottom line. The approvals for offshore transactions are not the same as a domestic transaction. So it's definitely hitting them in the pocket, but, you know, hopefully we can get it moved advanced where there'll be some domestic banks that'll take part in you know, the CBD space at least. I can see the larger ones staying away from the marijuana or something like that. They might have some issues with that, or the shareholders or board members, et cetera, that they have to deal with. But the local guys, I think, are set to make a lot of money if they are to get involved, because the smaller banks, smaller board of directors, easier and faster to make decisions. I think I see a lot of opportunity there for smaller banks to kind of grab a hold of this. And like anything else, while the industry is developing, it's an opportunity for the smaller banks to get a head start against the bigger banks because they're eventually going to come around. I mean, we see the way that more than 50% of the country's legalized marijuana in some fashion, and a lot even in the recreational manner. So I think that eventually the banks are going to get involved, and they're just losing ground to guys that are willing to get involved in the smaller banks. But that's yet to be seen. Rod, thank you so much for the interview. Let me give you an opportunity to hit your website, because there's going to be many people that are going to be listening to this, and I think it's a great opportunity for you to get your website out there. And there's a lot of information on your website. I went through it. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic source of information. I highly recommend taking a look at your website. Go ahead. Give them a plug.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Bob. I've enjoyed our discussion. It's been great to be on the program. So the website that I would recommend is my blog, and it's Kite on Cannabis. And I'm going to spell that just because I have a little bit of an unusual last name. It's KIGHTONcannabis.com. And a lot of people want to put an N there, like night, but it's actually like night, but without an N. It's Kite, KIGHT. So anyway, please visit kiteoncannabis.com. There's a place where you can contact me directly. You can also post your comments under any of the blog posts that strike your attention, and I read all of them and try to respond as quickly as I can. So thank you again for letting me plug my website.